Okay, can we turn together to Genesis 25? And I see that this is on, and it sounds on loudly. And so if it needs to be turned down a little bit, whoever's in charge of that can take care of it. Genesis 25, and as has been advertised, we're going to talk about the life of Jacob. And I'm glad to see some younger ones here, because when Jacob was born, he was the same age you were when you were born. Right. So that might be make you more interested in what happened to Jacob. Now, just to give you an idea of what we're going to do in these four sessions. In the first two sessions, we should, Lord willing, cover the span of Jacob's life. So we should make it from the beginning of his life to the end of his life, all in the first two sessions. And then the two sessions remaining, we'll go back and pick two things out of his life that were of particular interest to focus in on. So let's begin in Genesis chapter 25, and let's start at the beginning. Genesis 25 and verse 25. And the first child came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, that's Jacob, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. We'll stop our reading there and turn over to Hebrews 11. Hebrews chapter 11. And verse 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. Now, I actually said it would take us two sessions to get from his birth to his death. Actually, we've done it in the first 5 minutes. There we have it, the life of Jacob. I think I could probably come sit down now because we've done it. Jacob's birth, and then we read here in verse 21 of Hebrews 11, by faith Jacob when he was dying. We have the bookends, his birth and his death. Let's look a minute at what it says about his death here. Hebrews 11, 21 again, by faith Jacob when he was dying blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. How would you describe a person today if I told you these things about him? He was, in verse 21, a blesser. He was a worshiper. And it's kind of a little weird to think of, but he was a leaner, whatever that means. Now, if I described someone to you today like that, what would you think? Oh, I met a person, I met a Christian who, if I had to give three words to describe him, I would describe him as a blesser, and I would describe him as a worshiper, and I would describe him as one who leans not on himself, but leans on another, you know, dependent on the Lord, say. How would you react? You would say, that sounds to me like a mature, exemplary Christian. We would like to be like someone like that, right? The things that are said about Jacob, sorry, I get these mixed up. It might not be the last time this morning. But the things that are said concerning Jacob at the end of his life are things that are admirable qualities. Such a mature, if you want to use the word Christian, the word doesn't apply in the Old Testament quite the same, but what a mature Christian he turned out to be, huh? A blesser, a worshiper, a leaner. How do you get that way? The question is, how are great Christians formed? Are they born that way? Well, we read a little bit about his birth. Jacob means supplanter. Supplanter, if you wanted a quick street definition, you could think of the word cheater. But it's one who wants to put somebody else off balance. Like think of wrestlers, and so one person wants to put this person off balance and take his position, take his spot. So if you've been supplanted, somebody's done you one. He started out life as a cheater. Even when he was born, he was reaching out for the heel, trying to get the position that his brother had. So here's the life of Jacob from beginning to end. He starts out as a conniving, supplanting cheater, and he ends up as a blesser, a worshiper, and a leaner from start to finish. Now the big question is, how did he get from one to the other? And who changed him from being what he was to what a fine example of a person he ended up being at the end? Well, God changed him, of course. Now the question is, what were the tools that God used to take Jacob from what he was and shape him into what God made him? And what we'll do is, when we look through his life, we'll see various times where God pulls something out of his toolbox and uses it on Jacob's life to change him. Now, are we learning about all of this for the sake of learning about Jacob? The answer is no. It turns out that God is in a similar program with us. That is that every Christian, the Bible says in Romans 8, God has started a program with that person to shape them and form their characters to be like the Lord Jesus. You know the verses well. Romans 8, 28 and 29 talk about God's goal of conforming us into the image of His Son, that His Son would be the firstborn among many brethren. In other words, God in heaven said, I love my Son so much, I want to fill heaven with those that look just like Him. And He's going to achieve that goal. The question then arises, what raw materials would He use to populate heaven with such noble characters? If you're going to sculpt something, you get the best raw materials to start with, and then you start to sculpt from it. What raw materials does God use to form characters in the image of His Son? Well, He starts with people like you and me. Uh-oh. Well, that makes us worry a little bit, because we aren't the best raw materials to work with, are we? And the good news is that God was successful with Jacob. He did it. He took Jacob from what he was, and He shaped him through various tools that God used into one who would be a fine example of a mature child of God. And he was successful. And the good news is, if he could be successful with Jacob, he can be successful with us too. Now, one of the tools in God's toolbox is suffering. It isn't the only tool, but it is one of them. And Jacob, we'll see, had his share of suffering. Now, you're in Hebrews. Come back just... Or go forward one book to James. We're going to read a verse there before we go back to look at the rest of the life of Jacob. And as we look at James, you may think, well, why are we looking at James? What does he have to do with anything to do with Jacob? It turns out that the name James and the name Jacob are the same. Much like in Spanish, someone might have the name Pedro. And if he came and started to change his name to English, he would be called Peter. So the English is Peter, Spanish is Pedro, but they're the same name. Likewise, Jacob, when we read it in our Bibles in the New Testament, is James. They're the same name, just a slightly different language difference. So in other words, we are reading the New Testament epistle of Jacob. Well, it's not the same person as the Jacob of the Old Testament, but it's the same name. So let's read what Jacob has to say, if you will, at the beginning of James. And he says in verse 2, James 1, 2, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials." Well, what good will they do? Look at verse 3. "Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience," or endurance. "But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." In other words, New Testament Jacob is going to tell us a little overview of what Old Testament Jacob went through. Trials, difficulties, sufferings. They're God's tools to bring about endurance and patience. And you let this have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And what we'll see as we go through the life of Jacob is someone who started out as a conniver, a supplanter, someone who started out life as a Jacob, that is a cheater. God got a hold of him, and through his life, God would pull out one tool after another out of his toolbox. And in his wisdom, at the right time and in the right way, he'll bring out another tool out of his toolbox, and he'll turn Jacob this way and turn him that way. And we're going to see progress in the life of Jacob to where at the end of his life, he's nothing like he was at the beginning. And the good news for us is he's doing the same with us. He's working on us to conform us to the image of his son. And he's going to be successful too. So with that little overview of the beginning of Jacob's life, the end of Jacob's life, and what God would take him through in between, let's go back and now begin. We're going to look at Jacob's life, and we're going to look at the things that God used in his life to change him, and we're going to use it as encouragement to us as well. How can these things help us? So come back now to Genesis, and we'll begin our little journey along with Jacob. Genesis chapter 25. Let's see how it all began. Genesis 25, and we're going to begin at verse 22, when Rebekah now is pregnant with Jacob and Esau. Genesis 25:22. It says, "But the children struggled together within her, and she said, 'If all is well, why am I like this?' So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger.'" So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Now, what kind of little encouragement can you get from this little piece? Well, it turns out that even before Jacob was born, he was wrestling and fighting with his brother Esau. And even as he was being born, you could see this in him. He was reaching out for the heel of Esau. Now, granted, Jacob probably had no idea what he was doing then, but why are the things included here for us? Why are they written down like this for us? I get encouragement this way. The things that God had to change in Jacob were things that Jacob was born with. They were already there when he was born. They were not learned habits that he had to be broken of. See, this gives me encouragement. Because there were things that I was born with that have to be changed. There are indeed things that I could learn in life. For instance, I in life, through my own mistakes, could become an alcoholic. And if I then became a Christian, I would have to, between me and the Lord, work on that problem in my life. Yes? But there are other things that I'm born with. I did not acquire them by habit. And what's going to be encouraging here is that these are not beyond God's reach. Jacob had this instilled in him from birth. And yet God was still able to take him and to change him. And there, we have to be realistic, right? There are things that we acquire at birth. Some people, by nature, have a faster and shorter temper than others. Others, by nature, have a longer temper, but they are weak in another area. And sometimes we look back and we say, well, this is an area that's beyond God's reach because I was born with it. Well, take heart that Jacob was born with these things, intrinsic in his own personality, and it didn't stop God from turning him into a fine example of a child of God. So these things can be encouraging to us even from birth. All right, so we know this. I mean, look at verse 27. The boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man dwelling in tents. And we get another piece of encouragement. God understands people are different. Some tend to be more rugged types. Some tend to be more mild types. Some are born for the outdoors. Right? Some are born with other pursuits, blue collar, white collar, and so on. I mean, there are differences in people. God knows them and understands them. We aren't all born in the same cookie cutter image. Now, we come, of course, to this selling of the birthright, verse 29. Now, Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. Verse 30. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with some of that red stew, for I am weary. Therefore his name was called Edom, red. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I am about to die, so what is this birthright to me? Then Jacob said, swear to me as of this day. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of the lentils, and he ate and drank, and arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. And this idea that Esau despised his birthright means that Esau regarded his birthright as something common, that is, something not valuable. Jacob wanted that birthright. Now, the only positive thing in here we see about Jacob is at least he wanted the right thing. Now, he went about it through his dealings and his own craftiness to get it. It's been said, and we should take it to heart, that Esau sold away his birthright for a bowl of chili. And it may not be a complete exact match to what was going on, but it's close enough for us to get a handle on what happened. He sold away his birthright, things that were of permanent value, for something that was of temporal value. I take it he wasn't literally about to die. I think he was probably very, very hungry and with a little bit of hyperbole in his speech said, well, I'm so hungry, I'm about to die. But he could have made it without selling away his birthright. But we don't read any commentary by God here. We don't read anything of God's involvement, nor do we read any comment by God about what Jacob did or the way he went about it. We come from his birthright to his blessing. And Jacob is going to see to it that Isaac blesses him instead of his brother Esau. Jacob's going to be certain that Isaac blesses him and not his brother Esau. And we read about that as well. When it comes to Jacob's blessing, we remember the story. Rebecca, of course, knows that Isaac is going to seek to bless Esau. Sends Esau out into the field to hunt some game. And Rebecca, you know, brings Jacob around. And you see, the Bible says that Rebecca loved Jacob and Isaac loved Esau. How's that for a family, by the way? I was at a wedding one time. The father of the bride got up and he said, "This daughter that got married," he said, "she is my favorite daughter." He keeps going on about this and that. And I would think five times mentioned that she was his favorite daughter. So-and-so, so-and-so, my favorite daughter. So-and-so is my favorite daughter. What's funny is he had more than one daughter. The other daughter was there. So then he stopped and he said, "I think I should explain something about why I call her my favorite daughter." And I was like, whew. I mean, as I was really worried, you know, he's sitting here publicly proclaiming that one daughter is his favorite. He said, "I have special names for my kids. This boy is called my number one son. And this girl is called my favorite daughter. And the other daughter is called my pet daughter," or something like that. I still kind of didn't quite get it, because still the one's his favorite daughter. But anyway, apparently they were just labels and he loves them all the same. But I think it comes intuitively obvious that it is most healthy in a family that all the children know that they're loved and that there aren't favorites being played. If you want to think of it this way and bring it into modern terms, Jacob was raised in a dysfunctional family. Use some modern term there or something. Anyway, whatever you want to call it, he lived in a family where it was apparent that the father loved one son and the mother loved the other son. Certainly not the most healthy environment to grow in. And yet, what's the end of the story? God was successful in taking someone from a family that was not put together just right. And yet he was still successful. Where's the encouragement for us? We all come from different kinds of families, don't we? God was successful in taking Jacob from the family he had and shaping him into the character he was shaped into. He can do the same with us. Now, so back to the story. Rebekah, the mother, loved Jacob more. So when Esau is out hunting the game, she cooks up this scheme with Jacob. Cooked up more than just a scheme. She cooked up a whole lunch. And she took some ordinary meat and spiced it up a little. You know, make it a quick Chinese takeout kind of thing with all these different things in it. And presented it as if it were venison from the field. And Jacob goes in before Isaac. Puts on the hair, goat's hair, as if he were hairy. Smelled like game. Brought the food. And Isaac now would have to rely on his senses to figure things out. Now, Isaac was going blind at the time, so the sense of sight wasn't any good. He had the other four. He had his sense of hearing. And his hearing said, "It's Jacob." But then he had some other senses to go on. And he said, "Let me taste of what's been in the field." And he tastes that. Ooh, it tastes like venison. He was deceived, of course. He had his sense of touch. He said, "Come here, let me feel you." And he felt his arms. And he said, "It's hairy. It's like Esau." And he said, "Come here, old boy, let me smell you." It's in there. He did. He wanted to smell it. Well, I don't know what that has to do with a blessing, but anyway, it says, "You smell like Esau, outdoor gamey." So he went with his feeling, his smell, and his taste. And he was deceived. Now, this is a side comment because this is supposed to be about the life of Jacob. But we'll just take a quick side comment on the life of Isaac and say, interestingly enough, he heard one thing, and yet his feelings and his taste and smell said something else. And he was deceived by following his feelings. What do we do, by the way, when our feelings say one thing, but our hearing of the Word of God says something else? Just leave that as a little illustration to remind you. All right, back to Jacob now. He goes in to Isaac, and he's able to deceive him. And he uses these goat skins and so on to deceive him. And Isaac blesses Jacob. Although unwittingly, he does it. And he gives Jacob the blessing. Esau comes in later. Esau finds out what happened. Isaac finds out what happened. Isaac says, Esau, I'll give you what blessing there is left. But Jacob had managed to connive to get in there and get the blessing from Isaac. Well, this, of course, led to rewards. Remember, when Jacob took the birthright, we don't have any indication as to any ramifications of it. We don't have any commentary from God as to it. But this time will be different. This time, there are serious ramifications. Jacob now assumes, and rightly so, that Esau's out to kill him. Jacob works out, what do we do now? Go to Laban. Go off. Get out of here, get out of town, let things cool off for a while. So he'll go to Laban, and it'll turn out it'll be 20 years before he sees anybody in his family again. No ramifications of what he did, are there? Well, 20 years of separation. It may be that he never saw his mother again. We're not sure. But at least 20 years would elapse. By the way, here's a little question. How old do you think Jacob was when this happened? Now, you don't answer. Just kind of answer it in your own mind. This whole taking of the birthright, remember, this is before he's going to be married, because he's going to go to Laban and do the 7 years of work and so on, and then the other seven, and et cetera. So remember, it's before he was married and everything. In your mind, how old do you picture Jacob being, fleeing the house and going out to Laban and going to work for his wife and so on? Just ponder it for a moment. Jacob, at the time, was 77 years old. Now, this is not according to Jewish tradition or something. You actually can calculate it from the information in the book of Genesis. And you actually have to go all the way to the end of Jacob's life in Egypt and work backwards. But all of the dates are given. So many years here, so many. Jacob was this old when Joseph was born, you know, et cetera. And Jacob in Egypt was this old, and Joseph was that old. And you can actually work backwards and find out that Jacob must have been 77 years old at this time. And he'll leave home, and he will not see his family for 20 years. So it's quite likely that he never saw Rebekah again, his mother. Now, he goes out, and the Lord meets him. Let's look down, 27 was when he deceived his father. Look at chapter 28, and come down to verse 14. Well, let's begin reading at verse 12. After Jacob is fleeing, he puts his head on a stone for his pillar, for his pillow. Genesis 28 and verse 12. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to the heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham your father, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. Also, your descendant shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and the south. And in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. We'll stop reading there for a moment. This is shortly after he fled home. This is on his journey out. We start to see God's intervention as recorded in a real way now. At the beginning of what's recorded with this taking of the birthright, we don't read anything about God stepping in and doing anything. But now we do. And God steps in, and God himself gives Jacob the blessing. This is different now from Isaac doing it. And we start to now get the first hint of God's doing work with Jacob himself. And the first thing is, I wonder if Jacob realized it, that God himself had chosen to give Jacob the blessing. Jacob might have realized at that point, I don't know if he did or not, but he might have realized, do you know what? All the conniving I just did was not necessary. God himself stepped in to give me the blessing. Now, I don't know if it all dawned on him or not, but what he's about to face, which is 20 years away from his family, the fear of Esau finding him to kill him at any time, the fear of a number of things, all of these things that he'll have to bear weren't necessary because God himself chose to give him the blessing. Now, Jacob's going to continue on. His response to this is interesting. Chapter 28, look down at verse 20. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you have, and of all that you give to me, I will surely give a tenth to you. What do you think of that vow? How big of Jacob, wasn't it? To offer God a tenth. If God met certain conditions. See, by nature, he's a dealer. By nature, he's a deal maker. He did it with, he could be a used car salesman if he got just a little bit lower. But anyway, he did it with Esau with the birthright. He then was a conniver with the blessing. And now God himself deals with him. And he recognizes in some sense the magnitude of what's happened. And yet his response somewhat by nature is that he's going to cut a deal with God. This is just who he is. And so he says, well, if God will do this, and if God will do that, then he can be my God, and I'll even give him a tenth of all that I have. That's mighty big of Jacob. He's now moving his wheeling and dealing in with his relationship with God himself. And God is so patient with him. Jacob then goes to Laban, and he ends up meeting the spitten image of himself. One of the things that God will use, one of the tools he'll use in our life to teach us lessons and to shape us, is he'll bring us in contact with people that are just like ourselves. Sometimes the most annoying people I meet are just like me. Anyway, glad there aren't too many of them that bad. Now, he goes and meets Laban, and he cuts the deal, as you know, that he'll work 7 years to marry his daughter Rachel. And they arrange the deal, and Jacob works 7 years. And after 7 years of work, you know, that's a long time, folks, especially for a guy 77. looking to get married finally in life, and he's got to wait 7 years. And Laban, together, I take it, with some cooperation, whether active or passive, of Leah's, he gives him Leah instead of Rachel. And then says, well, you work another 7 years, and you can have Rachel. So let's add this up a little bit. We get 84, 91, nice spring chicken. And he marries both Leah and Rachel. And then, now what will his wages be? 14 years has elapsed. Laban says, I tell you what, why don't you work now for livestock, that is the sheep? And he works another 6 years for the sheep. Now, he's learning a little bit about what it's like to be deceived. He's learning a little bit about what it's like for someone to do to him what he did to someone else. Now, but ingrained in him is conniving. Ingrained in him is dealing. Ingrained in him is deceiving. Ingrained in him is getting an edge over the next guy however he can. Ingrained in him is supplanting someone else. He lives up to his name, Jacob. And what he does now when he's working for Laban, look at what he does. Look at chapter 30 and verse 37. So just to make you understand, there was a deal cut between them at this point where Jacob would get the sheep that were identified by certain characteristics. This could be striped and speckled and so on. And Laban would get the other sheep, and that way they could tell them apart. Now look at what Jacob does in chapter 30, verse 37. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs that were where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. Then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streaked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban, but he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flocks. We'll stop our reading. It goes on a little bit more about these rods and so on. What was going on? Well, Jacob realized, wait a minute. If the streaked and speckled and so on were going to be mine and the others were going to be Laban's, what can I do to make more of them born with the certain markings to be mine? So he invented this scheme. Where he got it, we don't know. Almost like a little hocus pocus kind of voodoo. I don't know what it is. Black magic or what. But my understanding is it probably didn't work. But it doesn't matter. The point is this. Jacob thought it worked. Whatever this business is of rods and whatever kind of thing he's doing with these sticks, works or not works, I'm not going to argue that one way or the other. The point is, Jacob was relying on it and thought that it would work to his advantage. And he did it, whatever it was. In other words, he found a way to edge out the other guy and to make himself more prosperous. And he executed it. So this is how we're going to divide up the sheep, huh? All right, well, let me take care of the sheep. That's my job, of course. And when Laban wasn't around, he starts manipulating and doing what he can, at least in his own mind. He thinks he's doing it to increase his own numbers. Now, God had a way to both increase Jacob's numbers and to show Jacob that it wasn't Jacob doing it. Any ideas how God would pull that off? Well, we find out, look at chapter 31. And Jacob is now going to be talking to Rachel and Leah, the daughters of Laban, his wives. And he says to them, look at verse 6, Genesis 31, 6. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. Now stop reading there for a moment. Fascinating what God did, isn't it? God allowed he let Laban change the wages, which was fascinating because whatever scheme Jacob had to have sheep born, so he thought this scheme may be anyway, born speckled, Laban, you know, and all the numbers start increasing speckled, Laban would come along and say, No. Was the deal speckled? No. You get the streaked. That's it. Yeah, I get the speckled and the others. Yeah, if they're streaked, those are the ones that you get. And suddenly, all of them start being born streaked. And then Laban comes along and says, No. It's not streaked. It's you are going to get the ones that have weird figure eights on the side. Yeah, that's it. And then I get the others. And lo and behold, they all start. Well, I mean, all meaning. The majority, start coming out with these figure eights on the side and so on. In other words, God used Laban's deception and he used Laban's changing of the terms of the game for Jacob to realize that Jacob's efforts were not doing it. It had to have been God doing it. And Jacob himself admits it. See, he was using techniques in his own strength to try to make himself prosper. But because of Laban's changing the rules of the game, and when he changed the rules of the game, the proportions of the sheep being born changed, Jacob himself had to realize it was God that was blessing him. It wasn't his own efforts blessing him. Sometimes God will do that in our lives. God will sometimes give us good things, and there are times we will think, it was my own skill and acumen that brought this about. But other times he'll make it clear to us that there wasn't anything we did. We just kind of fell into it. And it was God that was bringing about things in our life. And he wants to be recognized as the giver of good things in that way. And he did it in the life of Jacob, and Jacob had to admit it was God who did it. And verse 9, God is the one who has taken the livestock from your father and given it to me. The end of verse 7, God did not allow him to hurt me. What are we seeing in the life of Jacob so far? We're starting to see him have encounters with God, and we're starting to see him giving credit to God. At the beginning of his life, it was all Jacob. He's reaching for his brother. He wants his brother's spot. The beginning of his life, it was all Jacob. He cut a deal with Esau in a moment of Esau's weakness to get the birthright. It was all Jacob. He's conniving to get the blessing. And he does, but this time God steps in. God says, you know, I'm going to give you the blessing. Maybe Jacob realized, wow, maybe I didn't have to go through all of that. God indeed lived up to his word and gives him the blessing. And then he goes out to work for Laban, and what happens? Laban deceives him, but in doing so, Jacob now has an awareness of God in a different way. That God is looking out for his benefit. God is looking out to bless him, and he gives him credit for that. Well, at the end of this time, 20 years has elapsed. He now has to go back and see Esau. He's afraid of this. Look at chapter 32. Chapter 32 and verse 9. Then Jacob said, and this is going to be a prayer now as he's going back. Now, do you remember his prayer going out? If you protect me and bring me back, etc., etc., then you get to be my God and I'll even give you a tenth of what you've given me. Good old Jacob. Now listen to his prayer, verse 9. Then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. Verse 10. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I have crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well, and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he lodged there that same night, and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau, his brother. All right, stop reading there for a moment. His prayer is far different, isn't it? We just want to get through this one little thing before we break. His prayer is far different, isn't it? I am not worthy of the least of your mercies. And then he prays for protection from Esau, which is the first time now we start seeing Jacob relying on God for things. He's depending on God for things. But now, look, he's also going to give Esau a present. And I want you to take a look at the gift that wants to give. Verse 14. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. Then he delivered them by the hand of his servants. And he then will partition his company, being the manly man that he is. He'll put himself at the back and put, you know, his servants up front and then other member parts of his family up near the front, you know, and he'll be at the very back, you know, the brave, good old brave Sir Jacob there at the back of the line. Now, what I want you to notice here before we break is that there is somewhat of a shared dependence. In other words, he does indeed call out on God to rely on him and ask God for his preservation and ask and recognize before God that he's not worthy of the least of his blessings. Yet at the same time, he will use his own methods for all he can and give Esau these huge gifts to try to butter him up and to try to manipulate Esau's thinking of him and so on. We see some good happening. We don't see him all the way home yet. We start to see that now, I don't know if you want to call it 50-50, right? Before it was all Jacob, right? When he was born, it was 100% Jacob. And for all we could read anyway, no thought of God. And then we start seeing God stepping into the picture. And then we see God blessing him and God showing him that it's him blessing him. And now we come to the point where Jacob is fearful of Esau. And we now see him, well, he's kind of 50-50. I mean, he's relying on God. And yet he still has his old ways. We're going to have to break with Jacob being in this 50-50 spot. Better than he was. But God will still have things to do with him. So let's take a break now and have a word of prayer. Then we'll come back and finish his life. Father, thank you for the encouragement we get from Jacob.